Hi, everyone.
Welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. This is Swanik Jaikumar. And, as you know, in this podcast series, we try to examine different professions and career paths by talking to experts in those fields. If you're new to this podcast, I encourage you to listen to the introduction episode to get an idea for what this podcast is about. Today's guest is Mr. Tower Cook, Lieutenant in the U.S. Navy.
Hello.
Swanik, what's going on, man?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Doing well. So you wanted to talk about kind of career paths, right, for people?
So the objective of this project is to interview professionals in various fields and post the details from these interviews in a blog or like some sort of video format to provide some details to high schoolers about like exactly what they can do to prepare for certain professions. So as a high school student, understanding these various professions and career paths seems to be a daunting task because there are so many different choices available and we have very limited experience. So I would like to take you back to your high school days when you're thinking about college, your career, et cetera. And I'm assuming that you're probably in a similar situation like me with a bit of confusion and uncertainty as to what exactly to pursue. And after a few years, you have a successful career today. And I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey. So I'm just trying to garner that information that you learned.
Sure. So
what did you want to become when you were a high school student, and what different factors made you consider that career at the time, like parents or mentors or stuff like that?
Yeah, so when I was in middle school, actually, my dad's goddaughter got into the Naval Academy, and I had two grandfathers, one who served, well, obviously two grandfathers, but one who served in the Navy, one who served in the Army. So both of them served. So I was like, well, you know, I've always been intrigued by the military lifestyle and kind of wanted to do something with at least part of my, you know, youth in like a service aspect. And so when she kind of got her admission into the Naval Academy, I kind of was like, okay, I have someone now I can chat with about how to, you know, pursue a path in the military. And it wasn't always the Navy that I was intrigued by. You know, you watch movies as a kid and it's romanticized, you know, combat and all this stuff. So when I was younger, I definitely had more naive perspective on what a military career would be. I'll say that. It would be, you know, in the trenches or, you know, out in the field doing whatever, which is, you know, a combat role in the military is definitely very attractive to some people. And it's a very honorable way to serve. But I was just really looking for anything at that point in high school that would get me into a military career. It didn't have to be a combat position necessarily, but that was at the time the goal. And so I chatted with her about kind of some different pathways into it and like how to apply for the service academies. And she was kind of my role model into a lot of this. And so then when I was in high school, I started looking into the various things I could get into that would improve my chances of getting a commission. And initially, I was pretty narrow focused on the service academies. So Naval Academy, West Point, not so much the Air Force. I've never really been attracted to flying or anything like that, which is funny because my last position was being an aviation intelligence officer. So I was like a squadron's intelligence officer. So I had to learn that stuff. It was really shoved down my throat, all the Top Gun stuff and that sort of thing. But, you know, I really appreciate it now. I think a lot of those, you know, are good guys. And I think the Air Force Academy is a great way to go for a lot of people. And Air Force is a great service. But it wasn't for me. So I was really narrowed down to the Army, the Marines, or the Navy. And that was kind of my goal in high school, kind of more leaning towards the Naval Academy because there's more choices from there where you can go. You can go in the Marines from the Naval Academy. You can, you know, be on a ship. You can go to the Navy SEALs. You can fly if I ever, you know, caught the bug. So I, in high school, I was kind of, I was doing everything I could to improve my chances. So I was like, you know, I was in scouts, got, you know, my Eagle Scout. And then I was, you know, part of the crew team at St. Mark's. I was a captain on the crew team. And then I did some other things that I thought that weren't necessarily related, but ended up helping me in the long run, like being on the improv troupe, the St. Mark's and Hockaday improv troupe, which honestly, as an extracurricular, outside of probably the wilderness experience I got at in the Boy Scouts, and I was, you know, you went on the Pecos trip, obviously, having gone, were you in middle school at St. Mark's?
Yeah, I was, I've been here since first grade.
Oh, okay. So you went on the Pecos and you know how that goes, and they teach you kind of like the base level. It's really just learning the wilderness and survival and like world living, like in kind of rugged situations and how to adapt, stuff like that. That's helpful. But yeah, improv as an extracurricular has probably been the most beneficial to my career now, I would say. And so it was just little things like that that kind of got me into trying to pick a like a set of skills that I thought would come in handy for my application to a service academy. And so that's kind of the direction I was heading in school. I always wanted to be in the military from middle school on. But it didn't really, the only ever conflict I had with that sort of career like trajectory was in college. So I don't know if that's what you're aiming for or if you just want to talk about high school experience.
I think both is fine. And I just wanted to ask a couple of follow-up questions. So
yeah,
was like improv helpful because it like taught you to like think quickly or something like that? Or was it just like something unique that other people didn't have that you could like talk about?
So initially when I was picking up all these, like being on the crew team and everything and being an improv, I initially looked at all of this as like things I could add to my resume and really like beef up, you know, my application, which I think is the wrong way to go about thinking about a lot of this stuff. I think you should just pursue things that interest you and then you'll find a way in some way to apply those to an application because the, and that's just kind of not related to your question, but just kind of what I was thinking about this earlier. Because well, I think a lot of the problems people get into is they pursue things they think that would look good on the application, but aren't necessarily something that their heart's in. So they have a hard time when they're writing their essays or trying to convince, you know, whether it be a boss or whether it be, you know, a college application team, of like why they were in these things. They have a hard time justifying it because their heart's not in it. So I think initially that was the way I approached it. And improv wasn't necessarily, I didn't necessarily think it would beef up my resume enough to like tip it over the edge or anything. I just kind of was passionate about comedy at that point. But in the long run, what it did is I ended up pursuing it. I ended up doing it in college as well. I went to Texas A&M. And so I didn't get into the service academy, but I ended up going to A&M because that was another route to the military. And I ended up doing improv there because it's totally different. Like if my mind was set on the military from the get-go, the crowd you get that's going into the military generally is different than the crowd that is on the improv team or the improv troupe or that goes to the shows. So you really get a broad perspective of, you know, people, and you get like, you know, a better idea of basically, you know, what society is made up of, right? So, you know, you don't get like typecasted into a single, you don't get like trapped in a bubble, essentially. But yeah, what improv ended up doing for me was basically able to think on my feet, come up with things, you know, on the spot and in a high pressure situation, because you're in front of a crowd, sometimes hundreds of people. And you have to like entertain, they're like, entertain me. So like you have to figure out something that's entertaining to do. So my job now, how that's applied as an intelligence officer, you know, obviously I can't like make stuff up, because that would be a big deal. But it's easier to like unlock parts of my mind instead of like freezing on the spot if I'm asked a question that's kind of a tough question. It's easier for me to either, if I don't know the answer, I can defer and, you know, be like, you know, sir, I don't have that answer right now, but I will get that to you as soon as possible. Or, you know, there's just not the reporting to support that assessment at this time, something like that. It just allows me to be more comfortable talking with people, especially more senior people, and not freeze up in front of crowds. You know, like in my last job, when I was an aviation intelligence officer, I would brief the threat assessments for a strike package. So you have a team, there's, you know, fighter pilots, you have tanker units, you know, like tanker teams. So like people that are going to refuel jets, it's another, it's usually fighters as well, but they just have gas tanks on them. There's E2s, which are like a combatant control. It's like a aircraft, you know, air traffic control, but in the sky. And then, you know, there's other elements. There's helos sometimes, and just depends. Growlers, which are like electronic attacks, like jammers. So you're briefing this crowd of fighter pilots, which are generally a type A type crowd, and they'll know if you're BSing them like real quick. And so I think being in front of a crowd that wasn't afraid to heckle and being able to handle like hecklers as like while you're briefing and stuff that they need to know, I think improv has probably been the most beneficial thing for me to have done before that. So like you really never know, especially as a high schooler, I feel like it's really hard to know what's really gonna be beneficial in the long run to your career. Cause you have an idea maybe in high school of what you want to do. Like I thought I wanted to do the military. I never thought I would be an intelligence officer. And you think you know what it is, and you think that you know the things that would lead into that. But it's stuff that you think, you know, it's something that you wouldn't think necessarily is going to be the most impactful, that turns out to be, you know, wow, this is actually a very useful skill to have. But, you know, stuff like that.
Okay. I also wanted to ask you about, you said it was your father's goddaughter that was your role model?
It was my dad's goddaughter. So she actually went to Ursuline. So, I knew her my whole life. And then when I was in middle school, she was going into the Naval Academy. So then when I was at St. Mark's, I did lacrosse for a while too. Went to lacrosse at the Naval Academy, linked up with her, then like a lacrosse camp at the Naval Academy, linked up with her there, chatted with her about it. Like, yeah, she was kind of my Virgil through a lot of the pathways into joining the military. But there's a ton of different ways to go. So that was something I was pretty naive on in high school. I thought there's really only one way to go, and that was the service academies. So that was like a real reality check for me when I was in a senior, was not getting, you know, into the service academies and then having to audible, find a different way to go, which I thought would be the Corps of Cadets, which was, you know, pretty good at A&M, and doing ROTC. But then that's when I had kind of like a, you know, second guess. I was like, I don't know if I want to do the military. I don't like the structure of this. I like the Corps. I like the people that I was in there with. I didn't really necessarily like the lifestyle at the time. But once you're in the military, it's completely different than anything you're doing in ROTC or the service academy. So I just wish I had known different commissioning paths. Like officer candidate school is one. You know, you have ROTC, you have the service academies, and then there's a litany of other like lesser known programs that you can do to get in. So I wish I had known that when I was in high school, so that I wouldn't have typecasted myself so much, or like really put all of my investment into the service academies by some of these other routes I could have gone. Then I might have enjoyed my college experience a little bit more, or been able to orient myself with my studies a little better.
So what were some of the key takeaways you took away from the discussions with your dad's goddaughter, or like what you said, she was a role model and that she like sort of inspired you to join these academies, and what what were some of the things that you like looked up to?
Yeah. So she did crew. And so that was, you know, one thing, you know, I was like, okay, well, she did crew. That's probably a pretty good thing to like get involved in. You know, it was at the time pretty narrow-minded of me to think of this, but like, you know, you're on a boat, you learn basic nautical terms when you're in crew, like port and starboard. So I was like, okay, well, these will come in handy later. It was a very like superficial way of looking at all of this stuff. But I don't know. She's just like, she was always, you know, positive, willing to help out, willing to answer any questions. It was mainly lifestyle questions I had, and like, you know, what is it like there? You know, what type of things should you get involved in? Like, what should you be studying? Stuff like that. Specific things. I don't know. She's easy to talk to and like approach. So I think just I looked up to her as like a, you know, you're in it right now. I didn't know Dallas. You know, there's not a ton of people. It's not like a military hub. There's no bases nearby. And so I think the people that were going into the service academies or going to the service academy is really my only contact at that point, until in high school, one of my friend's dads was a prior Army captain. So I chatted with him about it. But yeah, other than that, I didn't really have a lot of exposure into the military lifestyle. So I just kind of reached out where I could. And she was a great, you know, she's a good role model still. But yeah, that was kind of the reason why I was reaching out to her for a lot of these questions.
So how did you choose your college and major, aside from like the service academy, is like deciding what you wanted to do at A&M?
Sure. And I wish I had been more careful choosing my major. So I was a political science major at A&M. And I think at the time, it sounded like something that interested me. You know, getting a degree so that you could be an officer in the military was kind of the end game. So I didn't really think beyond that, which I wish I would have. So if I could do it over again, I wouldn't necessarily do political science. I would have done maybe, you know, business, finance. I would have done really focused in on a language, maybe. I took Russian as a minor. And I took history as I had history as a minor, but I wish I really had gone more into learning a different language and then also maybe doing something a little bit more practical. I mean, engineering, any of the STEMs really are probably what I should have done. But at the time I was trying to take kind of a path of least resistance into it. So, you know, I didn't necessarily have the best idea of it at the time. I'm happy I did political science. I think it was a fine major to have. Exposed me to a lot of different things that I still use today. A lot of the stuff I learned about the Soviet Union in college is obviously has its applications in my job today. But I think in the long run, looking back at it, I wish I had done something that would have been a little bit more practical for use of when I'm done, like when I'm ready to get out of the military and do something else. Something that would have kind of laid a better foundation. Not to shy anybody away from political science, because I do think it's a good foundation for people that want to go to like law school or for people that want to be a career military, but you know, just depends.
And what factors did you consider in choosing A&M over other options?
You know, I applied to a number of schools like a lot of marksmen do. When the service academies didn't pan out, I chose the next best option, which was Texas A&M had the Corps of Cadets, which is like the nation's biggest ROTC program. So I was like, okay, that's clear cut. They put out the most commissioned officers after the service academies, so I'm going to go there. So that was kind of my main drawing point. Very happy I went to A&M. It's a great school. Met a lot of great folks. But yeah, that was at the time kind of my approach to all of this. I was pretty focused in on doing the military route. So that's why I chose A&M. But, you know, I'd recommend A&M to anybody. I think it's a fantastic school. You know, you learn a lot. You meet a lot of great folks. It's just a really solid place.
And did you have any doubts or hesitation at different points throughout your journey? And if you did, how did you overcome them?
Yeah. So when I was a sophomore in college, I was done with, because I had just gotten done with being a freshman, which is the lowest on the totem pole you can be for like the ROTC program. So we would have some pretty like difficult workouts, early mornings. And then you see other people in school just like really enjoying freshman year. And, you know, even people that are rushing, you know, it's more fun oriented there for them. And it was for us just like, oh my gosh, it was like miserable. I mean, I met and I got closer with a lot of those guys, and so it was fine. But at that point, I was like, I don't think I want to do the military. After what I've experienced here, I was like, this is enough. So from sophomore to like midway through junior year, I was pretty dead set on picking a different career path. So I was looking at law school and different things. And then really, I think it really kicked back into me after I was a junior. I was like, yeah. No, I think I can overcome this lifestyle. I've talked with enough people at that point. I just kept talking with people, kind of getting their opinions. By that point, I knew more people that were in the military. And, you know, they were telling me, hey, like, it's not like this all the, like, it's not like your freshman year. It's like you're your own person when you're not at work. So it brought me back into it. And I was like, okay, so I can still have a bit of a life outside of, you know, what I experienced my freshman year at A&M. And so I got back into it, yeah, from there. And I was like, okay, I'll do the commission route. While you're young, it's a good way to get out, see the world, get exposed to things that nobody else is going to be able to do. And then you can always get out and do something else later. So, you know, I haven't looked back since. I think it's been a fantastic experience. And if I had known the amount of things I would be able to do or that I have done back when I was in high school, I don't think I ever would have doubted it. I don't think I would have ever lost the path there, because it has been a great experience getting to see, like, you know, even the bad parts of being in the military. Like when I was in a gym for 2 months in Guam with COVID, like even that was a great experience. And you know, you meet a bunch of different people from all facets of life, and you know, being a person, I was in quarantine's wedding, like in October. So, you know, we went to Vietnam, been to Guam, I've been to Greece, been to the UK, obviously. I've seen, you know, the Philippines, been all across the world. It's just been a fantastic experience so far. And I couldn't recommend it enough for like a young person that wanted to do a career, because just even initially, give up 4 years of your life and then you can get out and then you go do something else. But while you're young, you might as well live it up and do something adventurous. So I think knowing that, I wouldn't have had any doubts.
Given your current exposure to various fields and different subjects, would you do anything differently if you could go back in time? Like you're talking about majoring in like some sort of STEM. Is there anything in particular that you would have liked to have pursued?
I really wish I'd spent more time studying and like really getting a grasp of the language of, like, I took Spanish in high school, and I think at the time I just kind of wrote it off, and I really wish I had paid more attention and worked on fluency, because I think knowing another language is a huge boon to whoever, you know, can master that sort of thing. I took Russian in college, but even then, like, if you don't keep it up, you lose it. So I wish I had kept up with it. I still know a little bit of both, and I even feel more confident in Spanish. But that would be one thing that if I could go back and change, it would be doing that. And I think a great way to do that is study abroad. It's a little bit harder with Russian now, but with Spanish, absolutely. You know, take advantage of any of the study abroads you can do or immersion programs. I'd say that was like anything that'll expose you to a different country while at the same time developing a skill you're going to use for the rest of your life, like a different language. I think that's hugely important. So outside of the STEM realm, I think if you're staying liberal arts, I think languages are definitely a good route, because there's more you learn, even though, you know, they come out with progressively better translation programs. I think that it's never a substitute for actually getting in to the country's like culture and really immersing yourself in the lifestyle. So that's always been the times in my life I've looked back have been like when you try to immerse yourself into a culture, have always been the most rewarding experiences. So So I'd say going back and doing more of that sort of thing.
What are some of the most important skills that you've learned throughout your journey? And what are some skills that you wish you had before, like either joining college or joining the military?
Yeah, so one of the most important skills I think I use to this day is the, you know, my writing ability. I never realized how, well, I did. You know, you always realize it's going to be important. But, you know, I was sitting in Mr. Brown's English class. Did you have Mr. Brown? Is he still around?
He's still around, but I did not have him.
Oh, he's one of the best teachers I've ever had. Yeah, I would not be able to be as good at my job now if it wasn't for him. Because writing is such a hugely important part of, I'd imagine, everyone's job, but especially the one I'm in right now. You're just writing products all day, and you're going to look like a fool if you don't write well. It's going to be really hard for people to like absorb the information that you're trying to pass. So I think the writing ability is a skill I'm really thankful to have. And I wasn't even the best. I was far from the best student he's had, but he helped me immensely. And even as like a middle range student at St. Mark's, it's very helpful to have that ability out in the real world. Because we're lucky at St. Mark's too to have that sort of those sort of things available to us, because I think a lot of people don't have those abilities, or they have to learn it later, which is way harder. Something that you're saying that I wish I had more of, is that the other thing? Is that the other part of the question?
Yeah, some skill that you wish you'd developed earlier or something like that.
Oh yeah, language abilities for sure. Earlier the better. It's like way harder to go back on that or to try to learn it like now. Just finding time to really neg down into a language. You know, you don't realize how busy your life is going to be till you're out there. Like I didn't realize how much free time I had in high school till I got here, where like sometimes you're working like 12 hours a day and you just go home, you have time to work out, go to cook, go to bed. And so really getting those languages down earlier would help. I would also suggest really getting invested in a hobby. I think that's another good thing. No matter what it is, you know, I like to hunt and to fish. And I think that if I had invested more in those when I was in high school, and really gotten good at some of the like more technical aspects of those hobbies, would have set me up better now and kind of given me a little bit more time to pursue those hobbies rather than having to like learn the hobbies as you get in them when you're older, which is fine. It's never too late to get involved in anything, but it's always good to have an outlet. So I think being able to invest in a hobby earlier would have been hugely beneficial to your life now, and especially a hobby that you can take anywhere. So I think music's always a good hobby. You can do that wherever, you know, playing the guitar or, you know, whatever instrument you want to play or whatever you're into. You can always find a community easier too. So no matter where you are in the world, you know, if you have a specific hobby, there's certainly a group tailored to that hobby wherever you are. So it allows you to kind of get involved with the community quicker than if you were just kind of on your own. You're like, okay, well, what do I do? You know, if you don't have a work community, which luckily I do, but if you don't have a work community necessarily to get involved with, having a hobbyist community is always a good way to go as well. So it can be anything, but I wouldn't have people write those off, which so often I think happens.
What are some of the skills that you learned in the military that serve really useful in day-to-day life?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of the IC trade, like intelligence community tradecraft, like analytical skills have come in handy. Just being able to look at problems differently. I think being able to kind of get a picture of what's going on in the world from like a macro aspect and seeing how that ties in with everything, I think that's helped a lot. Communication especially has been a big one. how to persevere. Here it is. Probably the biggest one has been able to adapt to like almost anything. So we were in, I mentioned it earlier, but this is just kind of like a random example. But when COVID broke out, I was on an aircraft carrier and we just pulled out of Vietnam. And about 2 weeks later, 2 to 3 weeks later, we had our first positive case on board. And then from there, you know, everybody kind of like was like trying to figure out what to do. We ended up pulling into Guam and they put 200 of us. They put more people elsewhere, but in the position, like the spot I was, they put 200 COVID positive cases in just a gym. So learning how to adapt and like be comfortable with living in a gym with 200 other people. First off, we're living on like a basketball court. And then we kind of like expanded our areas to living in like a small dance room. And, you know, we were rigging up TVs that they had in the gym to like, you know, watch movies or Tiger King or whatever was going on at the time. So just being comfortable, kind of like a stoicist mindset. It's like, you just, if you can't change what's going on, you just like learn to live with it and make the best out of your circumstances. And so I think that has been a very useful skill, especially as, it's not the most hardship place to be, but the UK has its differences. So learning how to live with, you know, the differences in lifestyle and if something is inconvenient for you, kind of like shut down, you can just kind of go with flow. It's easier to do things. That's been a big skill. But yeah, as far as like on the more technical side of things, I think my like analytical skills have been immensely helpful with anything from like, you know, if you're trying to invest on your own and try to get into that world, it's been very helpful to try to like get into kind of why I would invest in a certain company versus another company, because, you know, you can look more into what's going on in the world and like analyze things from that perspective. Just get like a more, you get like a process versus just kind of guessing.
So before like I shift to the next section, I also wanted to ask, what are some of the biggest differences that you've noticed between like the United States or UK or Guam or Vietnam? Some of these things that you've had to like adapt to?
Yeah, I would say up front, one of the most readily available examples I have would be like scheduling. And, you know, when one person says, you know, we'll be there, like in the States, if you're going to get, let's say someone's going to come and fix your plumbing, maybe give you a time frame of, you know, I'll be there between 3 to 4 p.m. If I in the UK, they'll be like, we'll be here sometime on the 31st. You'll be like, okay. The scheduling thing is big, at least in the UK. We speak the same language, but you don't always understand what people are saying. So you just have to figure out the lingo and all that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, in Vietnam, so the first time I went to Vietnam, I was actually with a group of high school friends, and we went the summer after we all graduated from college. We had done this before, like we had done trips together. We went to like, we went backpacking through Europe one summer, and then we went, you know, backpacking through Thailand and Vietnam after college. And we just kind of had more of this go with the flow approach to things when we were all together and kind of dive in head first. So like you eat what you're given, get used to the food. You can find anything you like anywhere, basically. As far as like major differences, they've kind of blended in now. I don't really notice a ton. Can't find good Mexican food. That's a big thing. I miss that. But they still have plenty of good food here in the UK, despite what some of the stereotypes may be, you know, just carry your own salt shaker and you can make anything good, hot sauce. But yeah, I don't know. That's a tough question because there's a lot of minor things that you can't necessarily just call back. I mean, Vietnam, there's some pretty readily available in the markets and how people, you know, how just like things are bought in general is a little bit different there. You just kind of, you learn to just watch what people are doing and mimic it, knowing that you're probably going to get ripped off if you're a foreigner a little bit, but, you know, just factor that into your budget and your calculus and you'll be fine. Just don't get mad. Just go with the flow.
Now we're going to shift gears a little bit and try to understand more about your job. So what exactly happens on like what does a typical day or week look like for you?
Depends. Initially, when I was aviation in Tillo, we would, so at home, we would do some threat briefs, like preparing them for deployment. So preparing them for whatever part of the world we were going to go to. For us, that was the Pacific, so mainly the South China Sea. So we would just do a bunch of different briefs, like threat briefs, looking in and research, looking into what was potentially dangerous for these guys out when they're flying missions in, you know, the Pacific. And then we also, you have collateral duties. So there's a lot of administrative functions that you fill as well, managing people's security clearances, keeping track of different classified documents, doing like anti-terrorism training and active shooter training, stuff like that. Now it's different. My first year here, I was on the watch floor for UCOM. So it's like a 12 hours day, 4 days on, 4 days off. And you basically are just like keeping track of what's going on in the theater, like the area of operations. So for Europe, it's, you know, the entire continent. And then now I'm at AFRICOM. So I look at the African continent minus Egypt, and I write like page long briefings for the commander. We write papers on different things, and we do a lot of kind of just quick turn products, answering RFIs, requests for information. So questions that people have, we'll have to, you know, research. We have 53 countries that we look at. So we have to like, you have to spin real quick and get smart on something and then type up something so that you can give the customer the information they need. And then, so that's all shore-based kind of work. And when you're deployed, similar to when I was on the watch floor, where you're doing like, you're actively watching the environment, and then you're tipping, providing tippers for whenever things are going off. So you just have to make sure the information gets in the right hand so people can make the right decisions and like give them the tools they need to calculate the threat appropriately. But when we're deployed, we're doing kind of a similar thing. We did some long-term analysis where we do, you know, data analytics into certain types of things. I'm not trying to give you the runaround. So, but we would also do, we'd be on a watch floor as well, depending on what part of the tour we were on. So yeah, that was another, like, that's a little bit more, it's not 12 hours on, 12 hours off. It's like 8 hours on, 8 hours off, but it's for 7 days a week. So we would just be sitting in this room, have like some screens all across the room depicting what was going on. And then, you know, keeping an eye on basically like the news centrally, but it's not, you know, it's other sort. Like we'd just leverage a bunch of different data sources and try to piece together what was going on. And if anything was going to be a threat to any of the ships in our strike group or any of the aircraft that were operating in the skies, be able to like pass that in a timely manner so that people can like react quickly, sort of thing. But yeah, no, it's like, it's exciting, but it is, you're behind a computer a lot and you're just like reading a ton. And so you just have to read and then digest the information and try to like piece together what's going on in the world and how that might impact what we're doing. Yeah.
So what is your favorite aspect of work and what do you like least about your work?
Ooh, so I work with a lot of great folks. So that's a good part of the job. Especially where I'm at now, we have people from, you know, there's civilians, government civilians, contractors, enlisted military, like a bunch of different people from all the services, from, you know, Air Force, Marines, Army, Navy. So getting to interact with them and like getting kind of putting all of their experiences together and trying to leverage everybody's, you know, strong points into putting together, you know, better products for the end customer, which for us is the commander of the combatant command. Yeah, so I really enjoy getting to work with a bunch of people from a bunch of different, you know, agencies and walks of life services. And then I really enjoy as well, just getting to know what's going on in the world. So you get like a totally different perspective than if when I was just reading the news, at, you know, back in the States, kind of get, you see real time, like what's going on, why certain things are impactful. With the Ukraine crisis, you see like grain prices going up. And then what might that mean for a country in Africa who relies on, you know, grain supplies from Ukraine to, you know, feed their populace? What might that do if they're not able to feed the population? They'll, you know, stability will break down. And then what was your other aspect? You're saying my least favorite aspect? Scheduling is tough. Being away from home is tough. It's always tough on the people, you know, that you're friends with and family with. And it's tough on loved ones having to, you know, flex to your schedule all the time. So just finding a balance is really important. And so you just have to, it's important to like keep in touch with people and like make sure you're giving the right amount of time to your family and friends and not getting too like bogged down in work or too like, you know, absorbed with what's going on at work. Make sure you're given like, you know, enough attention to your social life and mental health. But it's really, once you figure out that balance, it's not so bad. So you figure it out. But that's probably the worst part, being in the military, is like you've got to move around 3 years, 2 or 3 years. And so just being able to maintain those connections back at home. And you know, luckily I'm still really close to a lot of my friends from St. Mark's. So whenever I go home, any of the ones that are still in Dallas, you know, we meet up, hang out. And you always have those people. You'll always be able to go back and see them. So knowing that that's there also makes leaving easier, because they're not going, you know, your friendships aren't going to dissolve. Your family's always going to be there. Just making sure you give them the right amount of time is a big thing.
I think that's a good segue into the next question I had. Like, what are some steps you take to maintain your work-life balance, especially when like you're talking about you're getting moved around every 2 to 3 years, or like you have some 12-hour days or stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you just have to maintain communication, I think, is the biggest part. And like, make sure that you're giving them the time of day to voice their concerns and then doing what you can to address those. So, you know, I'm recently married, and when you get married, there's a certain amount you owe your spouse, obviously. So I can't just be working, you know, 12-hour days, 7 days a week, without touching base with her, without thinking about, you know, what's going on with her. So, you know, trying to carve out, whether it be like 2 hours a day to just do, you know, cook dinner together, or, you know, spend that quality time together. And then for friends, it's like finding a time, you know, find a different friend every week to FaceTime and like keep in touch with. And I'm not as good about it as I should be, because I wish I spent more time doing that. Sometimes it escapes you or it doesn't factor into your routine. So you really have to go out of your way to just maintain those connections, or just texting back and forth even helps a lot. So, you know, luckily we're really tied in. Nowadays we have the technology that allows us to, you know, reach out and touch someone from across the world. So, you know, just making sure you're utilizing that is a big part of it.
Congratulations on your marriage, by the way.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
One factor to consider when picking a career is compensation. It's certainly not the most important factor, but it is something to consider nonetheless. So without going into specifics, what can one expect from this profession in comparison to other professions?
Yeah, it's not the most high-paying job, but I think there's a lot of stuff you get out of it that you wouldn't in a more high-paying job. I mean, you get to do things that, you know, you have access to systems and information that most people don't. You have the ability to travel the world on the military's dime. I mean, obviously you're doing things for them, so there's that aspect of it. But, you know, making sure there's also a ton of different, you know, you get a ton of different perks, like the GI Bill, for one. You know, if you want to apply that to grad school, it's a good way to pay for grad school. There's a bunch of other like little things that come into play when you're in the military that end up kind of balancing it, I think, in the long run. But yeah, all the salaries are available online. So if you're a government, if you have a government job, you can look. If you're interested in the government and money is something you're concerned about, you just Google whatever the position is or like whatever kind of career path you want to follow. You can map out budget pretty well, kind of get an idea of what those jobs will entail. But it's definitely, you know, especially when you're young, I've never been under the impression that you needed to have a high paying job, at least, especially like right out of the gate. It's kind of, this is the time to develop experiences and stories that are going to last your life. And so those are pretty valuable. And I think once you, like, you know, I have a lot of great stories and great friends that got out of the military, and those are pretty invaluable. So I could not put a price on any of that, but just kind of a cop-out answer. I know I can hear myself talking, and I hated when people would give me this stuff back when I was in school, but whatever, it is what it is. You become the demon that you thought you never would. But yeah, I think those are pretty valuable, and you can't really put a price on those.
How important is networking, like, for this job? Not in terms of like maintaining in touch with your family or friends, but like just specifically for the job.
Yeah. Oh, it's hugely important. I would say your reputation will follow you. It's a pretty small community. At least in Navy intel, but really any Navy job you're going to get, the community is like your reputation will follow you across commands. And then the people, you know, will pop up randomly throughout your career. So I deployed in 2017, 2018. So we left, you know, at the end of 2017 and 2018 on a deployment. And one of the guys I deployed with is one of my good friends here. He ended up coming to AFRICOM. Another one of the guys that used to work for me, he's here. And so you just, those people follow you around, and it's good because you like know them, you know what their strengths are and like how you can, you know, how you can help each other out in the jobs you're in. And I think too, it's like, you know, another one of my great buddies who I was a roommate with back when I was going through intel school, he's at AFRICOM, but at a different location. So I can call him all the time to get an idea of, you know, if I need to know what's going on at headquarters, then I can just like call him and get an idea. So I think networking is hugely important. You don't always realize how important it's going to be until you find yourself needing to leverage some of the contacts you've had. And then being able to just be on a good talking basis with someone and reach out to them. Yeah, I would say never burn any bridges. It's like, it might feel good at the time, but in the long run, it's gonna really bite you. So always keep your pathways open and you know, be respectful and kind to everyone you work with.
If you were to have a fresh graduate who's looking to start in the military, what skills or personal attributes would you expect them to have to see them succeed in their career? Or if you were looking to hire them like under you, what would you look for?
Yeah. So, you know, I think there's a few things here. So work ethic is hugely important. So the ability to really like drill down and be willing to work hard, sacrifice like time and really getting smart on something. That's a big thing. I think another big thing is ownership. So being a responsible, mature person and owning up to mistakes you might have made, or if you're making something, like really owning that product and like being willing to, you know, stand up for any issues it might have, or being willing to take criticism, not shirking some of the responsibilities. Like if we need someone to do something and someone's like, well, that's not really my job, you know, those people are just really difficult to work with. And it's very difficult to like find a place for them if they're not willing to, you know, put in the effort or kind of go outside of their lane a little bit or outside their comfort zone. You know, those people are, it's just like it just makes everyone's life harder. So just being kind of not a yes man, but being like a, you know, having a can-do attitude, someone that's willing to step out of their comfort zone, take on a job, you know, knowing that they might fail initially, but that's not going to discourage them. So perseverance, ownership, work ethic, those are big things. And, you know, I've seen a ton of people like they don't even necessarily, I'm not saying, you know, especially as like a high school graduate, I'd recommend going to college, but a lot of the smartest people I've ever met have not gone to college. They've just been, you know, straight out of high school, enlisted into the military because they didn't know what they wanted to do with their life at the time, or they wanted to serve, or whatever they wanted to do that got them in the military. Some of those guys have just been the smartest people I ever worked with. And I think it really boils down to the amount that they're willing to put in to the job and like how much ownership they have in their position. And they're not just burning time. People that are just killing time are pretty tough to work with, but people that are really showing up to do the work, to, you know, find ways to be helpful, find ways to be like proactive. Those are really valuable people to have in the workforce. Everything else can be learned, but like your work ethic, you know, that's a hard thing to like teach somebody on the spot. So I think those are the biggest traits, is like just go into a job with the idea of like, I'm going to do my best in this thing. I'm going to spend the amount of time it takes to get good at it, and I'm going to find ways to like make other people's jobs easier. I think and then never trying to like shirk off a failure on somebody else. As you know, backstabbers are never appreciated in any walk of life. So I think as long as you're honest, work hard, not afraid to fail, but you learn from failure, I mean, those are some of the biggest things.
I was talking to someone else earlier about something similar, but they're mentioning that like the ability to, when just given like a really general task, not having like the steps laid out for you, that was something that they found was like very different in the military, because it just, like you're talking about, like just give me intel on this, and they don't tell you like what sources to access or something. That's how everything's done in like schools or colleges. They like pretty much spell it out for you, like what work you have to do. But in the military, that's sort of like you have to figure that out on your own. Is that something that you agree with?
Oh yeah, that's a great perspective. Yeah, resourcefulness is huge. So everybody brings a different thing to the team. Like you may think you have all the sources you need to do your job, and then suddenly someone else comes on the team and they're like, hey, you know, I use this a lot, and this site is very helpful for finding this sort of information, this is how you use it. So willing to like go out of your routine. You may think that you know everything or think that you have all the resources, and then, you know, willing to try something new, that's big. But yeah, and then also like figuring out stuff for yourself, you know, because like your boss isn't all like going to have the time of day to like sit down with you and walk you through everything all the time. So being able to like figure out different ways to do things is huge. Yeah, it's absolutely a great perspective. I'm trying to think like a specific instance of that potentially, but I mean, we get new people all the time. We have 8 people on our team, and we're responsible for the military capabilities. So we don't have the time necessarily to like sit down with somebody and walk them through all this. We kind of need them to show up and be willing to like look into this stuff on their own. So that's where like the proactivity piece comes in, is like, we'll do our best, but there's always going to be times where you just need someone to have get-go attitude to just sit down, learn something on their own, without being told to every step of the way. So just doing your best to immerse yourself into that sort of lifestyle, that's pretty good.
How do you personally define success in your role? And what are some examples of like characteristics that you see in people in your profession that you consider to be successful?
Yeah, so that's a good question. Like I was saying, I think the ownership is a big part of the profession. I think that's a big, like, that's a good successful trait, because if you're not going to own up to the information that you're passing, or if you're wrong about something, you can't just blame it on someone else, because you're going to look like a fool and no one's going to listen to you from now on if you're just going to blame someone else for everything. So, and knowing when you're wrong is another big thing. So I think the most successful people, they do that. I think as an officer, what determines success is like you take care of your people. Because that's a big point too, is, you know, you can't just leave out, these people kind of rely on you to like help them with their careers and what if they're coming to the UK, if they're like fresh out of high school and they come overseas immediately, they don't know what they're getting into necessarily. So they need people to help them along the way. And so a good officer takes care of the people under them. They take care of their sailors. They like make sure that they have everything they need at home and everything they need at work. So that, you know, making sure that their finances are good, making sure they're not making bad investments. You know, you can't tell them not to do something, but you can advise them to, you know, maybe you don't need this new car. You maybe buy one of these, you know, offhand cars. So in my job, I think, you know, from an intelligence perspective, it would be owning up to your products, doing your due diligence and like researching everything and making sure you're giving people like honest answers, not some BS that you're kind of putting together because it's the easiest assessment you can make. And then also taking care of your like younger analysts or some of your younger sailors that you have and making sure that there's no stressors that they have at home that might be brought into the workplace. There's always going to be life stressors that come in, but doing what you can to help alleviate some of that so that in the long run, they feel more comfortable, you know, going on a 6-month long deployment, leaving their, you know, new wife and baby at home, knowing that they're going to be taken care of. It makes everything way easier. Minimizing drama is another thing, which is like, you know, putting a stop to anything that might create drama in the workplace, because like in the long run, that's just going to detract away from the main mission. But yeah, just on like a day-to-day basis on the things I see that really make people, you know, fail as an officer. I think those are a few of them. And not taking care of yourself too, because no one's going to look up to you. Like not bossing people around, pointing the finger. You have to like get to know your people, relate to them, show them that you can do the job that you're asking them to do. You know, don't have them go like clean up, you know, trash in the bathroom if you're not also willing to go clean up trash in the bathroom. It's like those type of people, you just don't respect a person that does that sort of thing. So yeah, being willing to go on a limb for your folks, like making sure that they're taken care of at home, making sure that your space is in order before you're telling people to do things themselves, and then like doing the same, like you're willing to get in the dirt just as they're doing stuff like that.
My final question is, do you have any final comments or advice before we wrap this interview?
Nah, man, I think that I think what you're doing is like a really cool endeavor. I wish I had access to these sort of things when I was in high school. So I think that anything you can do to, you know, help out your classmates and you know, people at other schools with this sort of this database is going to be huge. Cool. All right, Svanek. Well, take it easy, man. And thanks for doing what you're doing. And let me know if you need anything else. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you for your help. Thank you.
Yep. Talk to you later.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your valuable time with this podcast. I hope you found this useful. To get notified about future episodes, please subscribe or follow Pathfinder 101 on Spotify, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts. Also, please visit pathfinder101.com for more career-related information not included in the podcast. If the blog or podcast added some value to you, please like and share it with your friends and colleagues. Thanks so much for your time, and have a great rest of your day.